The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Are you working? What kind of work do you do?
This is the Punt and Pass Podcast.
Touchdown! 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 Georgia!
Now, here are your hosts, two-time All-American punter Drew Butler.
Drew Butler, leader in the country in punts 49-plus. See if he booms this one. He does. Wow!
And Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl, and SEC Championship-winning quarterback Jake Fromm.
Flea flicker to get the night started. Downfield looking for Godwin.
Now, with the latest from around the SEC and the world of college football, it's the Punt and Pass Podcast.
Dogs are winners. A national championship for a new generation of Bulldogs.
Victory is mine. Yeah, surprisingly, I've been lame. For your next mistake, I put in work and watch my status escalate.
Your cornballs get stolen.
Welcome in. Running my plan, I'm the better man. Crazy roar. To the Punt and Pass Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Butler, joined alongside my co-host, Jake Fromm. Be sure to follow us on social media at Punt and Pass on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Drew Butler. He's at Fromm Jake. Puntandpass.com, the number one destination for all things college football. A happy new year to you. We are recording this on a Tuesday afternoon. It's January 2nd, 2024. So hope everybody went out of 2023 in the right way and came into 2024 in spectacular fashion. Hope it was fun. Hope it was safe. Hope everybody is healthy. And our national championship game in college football is set up. We're going to recap the Orange Bowl. Georgia hammers Florida State 63-3. The Rose Bowl was an instant classic. Michigan takes down Alabama. And the Sugar Bowl, if you stayed up late enough, Washington, the number two team in the nation, remains undefeated. They are headed to the national championship. So tons of college football over the holiday. Jake, you and I talked about it, that December 26th through December 31st date range, man. It's no man's land, but I bunkered down, and I had a lot of fun, and I ate a ton, and I watched a bunch of football, and it's all good, man. Happy 2024 to you.
Yeah, happy 2024 to you as well. It even sounds a little bit weird rolling off the tongue. Man, where does the time go? It definitely flies by. But, like you said, had some really good college football games. It was fun to watch. Definitely got our money's worth. Actually have to kind of get back to the real world here coming up. But we do get a nice national championship college football game to finish it up. And I think it's going to be pretty exciting, pretty fun to watch. Can't wait to chop it up and talk about it.
No question about it. 2024, a big one for you. You will become a dad. The countdown is officially on for you. So
that's right.
Off season right around the corner. And then you got to get ready to become Jake Fromm. I'm sure you'll have some dad strength overnight when that happens.
Oh, for sure. Can't wait for that to kick in. It's needed on the football field. So hopefully it carries me through for the rest of my career.
Well, you know what you have to do as soon as that happens. And of course, if I remember correctly, the due date is in March.
Yep.
You'll have to get your beautiful wife a push present. And where will you go for that? You'll go to Solomon Brothers.
Solomon Brothers.
Of course you will. Yes. Solomon Brothers Jewelers presents this amazing Punt and Pass podcast episode to all of you. Be sure to check out Solomon Brothers. They have three amazing locations for you to visit in the year 2024. Of course, there's one in Alpharetta just past the Avalon. There's the one in Buckhead that you know, 17th Floor Tower Place, and a brand new one down in Peachtree City. Solomon Brothers is family-owned and operated since 1982. They have the largest diamond and jewelry inventory in the Southeast, and the store is for anyone with any budget. It gets better. If you mention Punt and Pass or myself or Jake Fromm, you can get 10% off your jewelry purchase. See what they have going on social media. They're at Solomon Brothers on Instagram and Twitter, online at SolomonBrothers.com. Again, the lowest prices on the highest quality jewelry and diamonds guaranteed. That's Solomon Brothers. Check them out. Appreciate Solomon Brothers. Jake, I know you'll be visiting them as soon as you get back. You got a couple of things to do with that push present. Believe me, it is very, very important.
All right, let's go straight to the Orange Bowl. December 30th, it was Saturday afternoon. Georgia starts out the game, and it was over extremely fast. I think it was something that you and I had discussed, like which trajectory the game would go. Would it be an all-out stomping? Would there be a mutual show of respect? Just kind of call off the dogs, 40-10, whatever you wanted to call it. I think the line closed at, Jake, dogs were 23.5-point favorites. This game opened at 13.5 as soon as the Orange Bowl was set. Uh-huh. Then, of course, transfer portals, opt-outs. Georgia had a bunch as well, but they had some key players that said they were going to play, like notably Carson Beck. It closes at 23.5. They cover that going away. 63-3, making more than just one statement. A lot of ways to kind of recap this game, Jake, but the dogs were not messing around in Miami.
No, not at all. Just quick tangent here, what you're talking about. I wonder what the largest line increase that's ever happened before. I mean, yeah, like that's
big.
That's 10 points. That's a lot of points to happen in such a short time frame and span. So that was crazy. The game was also crazy. Just complete domination. Reminded me of the Georgia team of old. I would say old, man. I'm calling myself old here, but just kind of reminded me a little bit when I played of just, hey, we're going to go out, we're going to run the football on you, we're going to take our shots outside, we're going to hit our shots outside, and we're just going to do what we're going to do, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. Like, they committed to the run. I mean, Carson didn't have to throw the ball. I mean, like, they had 372 rushing yards. They nearly rushed for 400 yards in this game. Like, just out physical them, just out wanted to. We talk about it, bowl games. To me, it's just a lot about motivation. What are you playing for? Georgia obviously had a lot on their mind, a lot on their hearts, and they had a lot of pissed off that they wanted to take out on somebody. Happened to be Florida State, and just sadly that they got the butt whooping that they got, and that they were in the situation that they were in with guys leaving. And transfer portal and opt-outs, all that different stuff. I think you still, with all that being said, you still have to go out and put a good product out there. And as players that are playing, you still got to have some pride about what you're putting on tape. That was no good. That was no bueno. And you can say the committee got it right by leaving Florida State out, or you can say the committee got it wrong by leaving Georgia out. So take it how you want it. But I saw a really, really good football team beat the snot out of another good football team.
Yeah, you know, it's unfair to Florida State because obviously that was a skeleton crew of the team that went undefeated and won the ACC championship in 2023. I tweeted this out while watching the game, and you and I talked about it last week. I really did feel bad for Mike Norvell. I was a huge Florida State fan all season long, believed in their roster, believed in what they were doing, thought they had the team, the type of team to compete when it comes to a college football playoff. Nasty defense, good run game, and a quarterback, of course, before he got hurt, who really could be a significant X factor to take a game that maybe you should have lost and flip that into a W. Here's what happened. We all know it. Jordan Travis gets injured. Then the room full of suits that is the college football playoff committee essentially ends their season on a technicality, which was a huge bummer. They said, hey, without Jordan Travis, even though they're ACC champs and undefeated, Florida State can't compete. They're not one of the best four teams in the country. But then this is also what I said right after tweeting that I felt bad for Mike Norvell. And this statement has zero bearing on Florida State. So don't even think about Florida State when you're listening to what I'm about to say. Georgia beat the Seminoles by 60 points, 63-3. The College Football Playoff Committee still has not addressed moving Georgia 5 spots back to number 6 after they lost the SEC championship game by 3 points on a neutral field. Again, what they did to Florida State has nothing to do with that statement. But what Georgia showed and what Kirby Smart obviously wanted to prove was that if the committee's going to say they were looking for the 4 best teams, well, then Georgia, by doing what they did on the field, I don't know if any team could have beat Florida State, even with the skeleton crew, by 60 points. And they really called the dogs off about midway through the third quarter. Georgia made a statement to say, hey, we were one of the four best teams. Hey, we do have a great culture. Hey, we have a lot of buy-in in Athens. We're coming to win this game. So I was at Publix picking up a couple of things. You know, shout out a Buffalo Chicken Tender Pub Sub. Those things were dangerous. Picked up one of those before the game. So I throw on 750. Publix is 5 minutes from my house. It's right before kickoff. And Neil Hondo Williamson throws it down to DJ Shockley. Hey, he's with Coach Smart. And Kirby, you know, was given kind of his short, right before pregame kickoff speeches to DJ. And now this is getting picked up. But he says, and all the broadcast team was talking about pregame was there's nobody in the stadium. They were like, weather's kind of overcast. There's nobody in the stadium. There's a lot of Florida State people. They were essentially setting up a scene where it was like not a very conducive place to play a football game. So DJ Shockley goes to Kirby Smart and says, Coach, what do you feel about this game? And I'm listening, and he says, yeah, we don't care if there's nobody in this bitch. We're here to play and win the game. And I was like, wow. He said that before the game. I go, okay, I think Georgia's going to be a pretty safe play in this game. They were on a mission. They accomplished that mission. And then after the game, Jake, Kirby, extremely candid in his post-game press conference, he says college football needs to figure out what they want to do about bowl games. Because what happened here today is a direct referendum on the situation that we're in. He acknowledges that things are different and that it's okay for things to be different, but there needs to be leadership in college football to say, what do you want from bowl games? Because it was unfair to the guys on Florida State who did play the game for essentially every single one of their statistical leaders across the board not to play. They get left with the JV team out there and got their pants pulled down by Georgia.
Like what do they do? Like what are the answers? Is saw something, you know, is bowl week zero.
I don't like that.
So everybody's there. I don't like that either. I'm not a fan of that. I saw something where it's like, hey, you move everything else back, move the recruiting signing day, move all that stuff back and after the national championship.
Yeah, I like that.
And then that way, and you kind of bump everything else back up. The championship weekend is played earlier, bowl game happens sooner, and then just everything starts to roll and flow a lot more quicker, a lot more to rival the NFL playoffs, right?
Like yeah.
There's a bye week, and you get right back into it. You don't lose the swing of things. There's not this gigantic break in play.
Kind of own the schedule that way too. Like you just start bumping back the calendar and college football. There's a whole season dedicated to transfer portal. Now there's a whole season dedicated to that signing day. That December 20th signing day, it's so stupid. It doesn't make any sense, and it's unfair to the coaches if you want to have sympathy or empathy for them. But Jake, I totally agree with you. What do you do? Now, when I was playing, you know, many, many moons ago, we got to go to a Sugar Bowl. That was a huge celebration.
Yeah.
We got to go to an Independence Bowl. That wasn't as much of a celebration. We got to go to a Liberty Bowl. Okay. And then my senior year, we went to the Outback Bowl. That was fun. Bowl games used to be a big celebration. It was a reward for winning 6+ games. You got your gifts. You got your big travel stipend. You got a couple of nights off. It was a hat tip to a phenomenal season. How do you get that back? Because that is certainly gone.
Yeah.
Do you, in the new age of NIL, create some sort of sponsorship dollar player pool where now you're incentivized to play the game because there is a paycheck waiting for you after the game? I think that could certainly work. Could the sponsors come up with that money? I have no idea, but there has to be some sort of incentive in which, one, you make a bowl game, you're being rewarded.
Yeah.
Two, you want to be there. I mean, money is the great motivator for most people. I think if you told each player, hey, if you play in the game, you get $2,500 cash or whatever the number is, couldn't be something nominal like a couple $100. It'd have to be probably four figures. I think a lot of people would be amped up to go. Hey, I want to play. I want that paycheck. And then also, if you did move back the signing day, like you just alluded to, Jake, I think what bowl season becomes is truly an exhibition for a lot of these guys, much like week 17 and 18 in the NFL is for potential free agents. Hey, man, I want to play. I want to put good tape out there. I want to up my value in the market. I want to attract other suitors to take me if I'm looking to go elsewhere. you could accomplish those things with the right setup, but ultimately what sucks, Jake, is there's no leadership in college football, so these types of creative ideas don't even get brought to the table.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I think the feeling and the feel good around bowl games are just lost. Like, I feel like my era was kind of a transition. Like, we all felt pissed off. No, I mean, no offense to the Sugar Bowl, for being in the Sugar Bowl. Like, man, we were the first team out 2 years in a row, and it sucked. Nobody wanted to be there, especially the first year when we played Texas. We're like, man, this sucks. We shouldn't be here. And nobody took it serious and wanted to be there. Now, we definitely learned from our mistakes the next year when we played Baylor in the Sugar Bowl, but it's the bowl games have lost their luster a little bit.
No question.
And just the I wonder if it's a culture thing and everything so me, because the whole, hey man, let's go down there as a team, hang out, enjoy this last week that we have together, it's just gone, right? Nobody has that anymore. Nobody's trying to enjoy that. It's sadly, it's just about me, and how can I set myself up for my future and move on from there. So something that's really special that just seems to get lost in the shuffle is, man, like that locker room for that last game, it'll never be the same again.
Yeah.
When you look around, you know, coach says it, you know, remember high school coach saying it, like, hey, take a look around, like the guys and the men in this room, this is it. This is all we got. Play for these guys, let's go out and really just enjoy it. But we've seen to have lost that kind of feeling and motivation for the game.
It's such a cliche thing that every coach says, but it's so true. Oftentimes, yeah, the biggest cliches are the most true. In every football locker room that I've been in, that exact same thing is said after the last game. Take a look around. This is the last time that this group of men or people will be together on the same team. So it's interesting where college football goes. Look, man, I have no idea. Thankfully, the college football playoff semifinal games were great. In years past, it hasn't necessarily been that way. There have been some big blowouts, then it sets up kind of an anticlimactic national championship game. But kind of transitioning into what happened in the Rose Bowl and Sugar Bowl, recapping and finishing up our recap on the Orange Bowl, I would definitely say that Georgia solidified, even though it was against a much lesser opponent, that they were one of the four best teams. And that's what made it tough for the committee to say we went with the four best teams when they put Florida State at five in front of Georgia. Well, clearly that wasn't Florida State, the number five team that played. That was a different Florida State team. Yeah. But Georgia was like, No. We had 4 weeks to get healthy. We have some serious ball players. We almost rushed for 400 yards. Kendall Milton got player of the game after playing for like 17 minutes, ran for over 100, two touchdowns. They couldn't even tackle him. Carson Beck, highly efficient. Georgia did what they did. They ended on a great note. They're Orange Bowl champions, and they are on to 2024. Okay, let's talk about the Rose Bowl, because this game, Michigan versus Alabama, was the one that a lot of people had their sights set on when New Year's Day came around. Number one Michigan against number four Alabama in Pasadena. And it closed Michigan a 2-point favorite. I was back and forth on this game. I think I even texted to you, Jake. I was like, I have no feel. I have no feel on this game. If I had to, I'd be a simpleton and take the points to Alabama. But this is what I did think. With the amount of time off, 4 weeks off for Alabama, one makes the argument, hey, Saban with that much time to prepare, it's a no-brainer. I was trying to make the argument, Jalen Milroe was playing with such confidence and such momentum that 4 weeks off might hurt this guy and this Alabama offense that had been rolling. And Michigan's defense came to play, man. Four sacks in the first, like, 15 minutes of the game. Oh, yeah. That was insane. They stifled the run. Alabama really didn't have many answers for them. And then Michigan has a great drive at the end of the game to force it to overtime. Of course, Michigan wins 27-20 in overtime. But I guess let's just start with, what were your overall thoughts? It was a really, really good game.
Yeah. I loved what you said. Completely agree and definitely would have agreed in talking in a past tense setting that we would have thought Saban would have come in with a much better plan. But I, after watching the first 30 minutes of the game, that was not true.
No.
Man, like, Harbaugh in the offense They did a fantastic job. Shifts, motions, tons of eye candy for the defense.
Tons.
Very, very creative in the run game. And then on the defensive side of the ball, they got after the quarterback. So they saw what Georgia did, and they said, ah.
Got to get after
him. We can't do that. So they just were bringing five-man hits, bringing five guys. Normally you bring four. They were always bringing extra. And they collapsed the pocket and didn't allow a gap for Jalen Milroe to sneak through and slip through. So Jalen Milroe felt uncomfortable the entire game. And I loved this analogy that I think Kirk used in the game. But the Michigan defense played like the Ravens defense during that game. Like lots of chaos, lots of blitzing, and you know, it's the Harbaugh brothers. Like,
yeah,
of course, you know, they're gonna spitball some ideas back and forth, and I thought the plan that Michigan came in with, they were more aggressive, and I also agree with what you said of having the time off for Jalen Milroe. It looked like they were out of sync on offense.
Kind of slowed him down, yeah,
and could not. Honestly, the passing game felt very tough for them. Just off page with a bunch of receivers, and it was really kind of tough to watch them on offense in that first half. Other than that that drive they had on the plus side of the ball after a Michigan turnover. So, but the game ended up being a game of adjustments that Kirk was also saying during the game. And Alabama came out in the second half, made some adjustments, started running the ball. Inside zone, so all the blitzing guys and all the movement up front, they were able to crease those inside zone runs. But it's, I don't know, just the entire game, the Alabama's offense was just out of sync the entire game. But that's been the entire Alabama offense the entire season except for one game.
That's right.
One game when they played Georgia, the recency bias on that game. But other than that, we got the same Alabama product we've gotten the entire season.
No, you're totally right. And Michigan, to start the game, you're like, what is going on? First play, McCarthy, boneheaded decision.
Saved
because Caleb Downs' heel was out of bounds. You text me, how is that reviewable? And it was because the sideline judge threw his cap off, signifying, hey, he had stepped out of bounds. He was the first guy that touched the ball, so it negates the interception. Then Alabama punts. I don't know what Michigan's return man was doing. I mean, he was trying to make a play. He runs up, tries to catch it, fumbles it. That's how Alabama gets their first touchdown. Michigan had dominated outside of a couple of boneheaded decisions, and they were only up by three at half. And I'm sitting there going, here we go. Here we go. Michigan should be up by 14 at least. Alabama's played like shit. They're still in the game. They're going to wait for Michigan to make a mistake late. Alabama will pounce. Alabama's going to win. That was my thought process in watching the entire second half. And then Alabama puts together a drive midway through the fourth quarter. They score a touchdown. They go up by 7 points. And Michigan's offense, who hadn't done anything in the second half of the game, kind of goes back to one, running the football. Hey, establish the run. And then they start mixing in that eye candy. And the eye candy was really shown on a couple of plays where Blake Corum, wide open, kind of coming across the formation, out of the backfield, in the shotgun. And when they were showing the replays, Jake, with that pre-snap movement and motion, you could see the linebackers communicating with each other. Hey, I got him. I'm passing off him. And it would just get lost. Communication was broken down. And Blake Corum, who's one of the best players in all of college football, just wide open for 40-yard gains. And you could see Nick Saban on the sideline, so frustrated, talking to his defensive coaches, going, what's going on with the communication? Because the backers and the DBs, they're clearly not on the same page. Michigan puts together an amazing drive. They tie it up. I didn't know if they were going to go for two or not late. They did have three offensive they had three timeouts. So I thought you just kick the field goal and see if you can get the ball back. But sending that game to overtime, what were your thoughts? I was sitting there going, I don't know what's going to happen. This is going to be a good one.
Overtime, I'm thinking, wow, I've seen this before.
Yes, you have.
I'm like, well, Alabama's just going to find some magic somewhere.
Of course. Of course.
And figure out how to do it. And they had a chance, made a play on third down to get it within, you know, a decent try and range on a fourth down call. And My wife, Caroline, she's like, hey, what are you calling right here? And I said, well, I'm going to put it in my best player's hands, and I'm going to have some kind of zone-ish read with some kind of advantage throw off of it. And that's pretty much exactly what they called. And there was answers within the play. Like, you can disagree. Oh, it was a bad call, a bad play. Like, the running back motioning out of the backfield, like, that was an advantage throw. There was space on that guy. He could have thrown it out there. And then the run itself wasn't a terrible run. Like, hey, the guard could have pulled a little bit tighter. And if we stay tight off his hip, it possibly looks like he walks in. So, but as a quarterback, it is so hard to operate if you can't get a good snap.
I know.
When the snap is constantly at your feet, at your knees, your eyes have to drop. And now I'm worried about catching a snap and rushing myself rather than, hey, if I get a good, nice, easy shotgun snap in my chest, I can keep my eyes up, see what's happening. I got a better feel for what's happening. But, man, this is their, 14th game, and we're still having snap issues?
I know. What's up with that?
That is...
That's mental. That's mental.
You can't have that show up in games.
That's the yips.
Whatever it is, it's not good. So, but yeah, man, I think there was a play to be made on the last play, and they didn't make it. And as a team like Alabama, you just can't keep putting yourselves in that situation and expect to be 100% out. Like, eventually it's going to catch up, and it did. And Michigan held on just a tad bit longer.
Yeah, so you're breaking down the 4th-and-3 in overtime. Alabama needed a touchdown to move the game forward into a second overtime. And remind me if I'm wrong, you may or may not remember, they were in shotgun, running back was set to Milroe's left. Did the running back go in motion before the snap, or did he just go out to the okay, so he goes in motion before the snap, empty backfield. The snap is low at Milroe's ankles, and he catches it, thankfully. And just immediately dives towards mm-hmm. I mean, runs towards the center of the center of the line. And it was just squashed. The whole play was done. That's why I was like, oh my God, what just happened? Now, when you rewind it and you see what they were trying to do, the two outside receivers on the left side of the formation are blocking downfield. The running back who was in motion has outside leverage on the linebacker. So what Jake is saying is, if the snap was in Milroe's chest, he, one, gets to look and see that guard's pulling, but two, look out left, see that the running back has that advantage throw, get a toss it out there, and then you go make a play. But Alabama loses. Got to give credit to Blake Corum. His jump cuts, dude, that kid can run the football. Two plays in their overtime possession, he scampers into the end zone. Michigan gets a huge stop, and you know, they lift the big monkey off their back. That was their third straight college football playoff appearance. They obviously got smoked by Georgia 2 years ago in the Orange Bowl. Instant classic barn burner against TCU last year in the Fiesta Bowl that they lost. But they're headed to the national championship. So number one Michigan knocks off Alabama. And Nick Saban, after the game, you know, gives a ton of credit to Jim Harbaugh in Michigan, gives a ton of credit to his players, and says, this is one of the teams that I'm most proud of. Do you agree or disagree with that? Is that coach speak after they lose in the semifinals?
I'm sure it's not the whole truth, but it's not a lie either. You know, they faced a lot of adversity this year. The early loss to Texas.
Yep.
I mean, shoot, benching your quarterback for the next 2 weeks, that whole debacle, and to fight your way and win the game in Auburn, in Jordan-Hare Stadium, in the fashion that they won that game, beat the two-time national champs in the SEC championship game, and really fight that one down to the end. So, yeah, I mean, they faced a lot of adversity that year, this year, and came up just a tad short. But I think with the product they had, they over-exceeded expectations.
100%. 100%. I mean, they almost lost to Auburn. Like, do not forget that. It took a 4th-and-31 miracle. Then, of course, what did they do? They beat Georgia, who hadn't lost in 29 straight games. So I tweeted this out, and I got some amazing reactions, and it wasn't my intention. But I said, as I'm watching, first off, the Orange Bowl, I said I could tweet out all night and give you hundreds of reasons as to why Georgia should be in the college football playoff. And I said, plainly put, they're one of the four best teams, and that's the committee's job, is to put the four best teams in. I said, but it really all comes down to just one person. It's Nick Saban. I said, one, the committee fears him. Two, ESPN loves him. But three, and most importantly, he's not afraid of Georgia. He beats Georgia. That's the whole reason why Alabama got in. So the reactions I'm getting are, that's outrageous. Why would the committee fear him? ESPN has nothing to do with it. And I'm tweeting back at people. I'm like, yeah, those are hypothetical jokes that I'm making. The third point is the most important point. He beats Georgia. If Georgia just would have won the game, then we're looking at Georgia, Texas in the Sugar Bowl, and you're looking at Michigan, Washington in the Rose Bowl. So Georgia didn't take care of business when they needed to. And look, you could make the argument, should Georgia have been in? People could go, no, they didn't win their conference championship. Okay. But it's just funny because Saban is the GOAT, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And Jim Harbaugh and that Michigan defense really flexed their muscles, and they got a big win. And when I think to myself, Bama doesn't lose close games, they lost the Rose Bowl. So Alabama done. And I would have to make the argument that the highlight of their season was stealing one from Georgia.
Yeah.
In the SEC. So boy, have the tides turned. No pun intended. All right, let's go to the Sugar Bowl. A great one with a crazy ending. Washington 37, Texas 31. The Huskies, still undefeated, are going to take on Michigan. So you have your number one versus number two teams for the first time since 2019 playing in the college football playoff national championship game. That game, of course, is Monday night, January 8th in Houston. But this was a crazy ending. And Michael Penix Jr., that dude can deal the football downfield. Yeah. Jalen McMillan, Rome Odunze, Polk, Michael Penix, like Washington has a really, really sound football team. It was an unbelievable game. It started at 9 p.m. I mean, what is ESPN doing? I fell asleep like three times. Unfortunately, I saw the ending, but dude, that game didn't end till like 1 a.m. What's going on?
Oh, it was brutal. Yeah, I had to go to bed at halftime. You know, your homeboy's got to get up and go to work the next day.
Yeah.
And had to catch up this morning with the guys in the locker room and watch a few highlights myself. But yeah, man, I did the ultimate deal with the Rose Bowl here. So I take my time, like I record the Rose Bowl, like when it starts. And so I'm doing my deal all day, whatever I need to do. Wife and I go out to eat.
Oh, look at back. You. Pro move.
And I really technically don't start watching that game until like 6:45, 7 o'clock.
Yeah, you text me way late and you were like, how was that play reviewable? And I was like, I mean, it was like halftime. Like, what play are you talking about? Because the first half was pretty crazy.
And I made sure, don't check my phone. I know people are texting me, don't look at it. I obviously do not check Twitter. And I catch up to that game and get like the live ending. So, I mean, I felt like a genius. I wish I could do that with the Sugar Bowl, but man, that was so late. But yeah, they had all day, could have definitely moved those games up. But Washington, man, after watching three whole games from them this year, both Oregon games and then this game,
they're good. They're
a good football team, yeah, man.
They fly around.
They're playing with a lot of juice. They got speed, they got physicality, and quarterback's playing at an unbelievable level. And it just seems like every shot play, like they're hitting their shots. Like the receivers are going out, they're making a play. They can run the ball just good enough to do what they need to do. They play good defense. Never really felt like Texas got in a rhythm in the game, play calling wise. And Washington had a great third down plan for Texas. Now, Texas was always had third and long for some reason in the first half. Couldn't get anything going on first and second down. And then they would show Texas cover zero. And so quarterback obviously seeing it, and he would have to get to a quick cover zero answer, as in just, hey, throw the ball out wide in the flat, receiver screen here. And they're bluffing out of there and going back to play zone coverage, but they just rally and make the tackle. Oh, sure, yeah. Hey, third and nine. Now it's fourth and five. Punt it and get it back to us. So, Texas being unable to stay on schedule on first and second down bit them a little bit in the first half. Obviously, they rallied back in the second half and got some stuff going. But I love Washington's plan. Love the way they play. And I think they're a dangerous, dangerous team.
No question, dude.
To win the championship this year. And how about that for the Pac-12?
I know, on the way out.
On the way out to get a national champion, have the opportunity to get a national champion is pretty sweet and pretty cool to me.
Yeah, it should be a great matchup, kind of best on best. I mean, Michigan's defense, one of the tops in the nation all year long. Going into that Rose Bowl, excuse me, after what the Big Ten had been doing in their bowl games, you're sitting there going, I don't know, this could be a bad showing. But Michigan really stepped up. And then when you look at how Washington attacks on offense, it should be a great matchup. I'm looking at it now. The line is out. Michigan's a 4.5-point favorite. That's too many points. That's too many points. This is going to be a close game. So I'll take the points just right now. We'll obviously break down that matchup on Thursday's episode of Punt and Pass. But Texas fights back. They're down 10 late. They kick a field goal to go down by 6. Sorry, 7. They were down 37. Whatever. They kicked a field goal late. Now they're down by 6. They must have been down by 9. Excuse me. That's my Georgia math degree showing up there. And then they get the ball back because what was crazy, I don't know if you saw this play, Jake, Washington's trying to run the clock down late, less than a minute, and their running back gets injured.
Drag him off the field.
I know. So they had to stop the clock, and then they punt, and then there's a fair catch kick interference on the punt return. So that's a 10-yard penalty. All of a sudden, Texas is like, all right, we have a chance to move the ball down the field. A couple deep shots. Quinn Ewers, a great thrower of the long ball. A couple amazing toe-tap catches along the sideline. And you look up, and Texas is right there with a shot to the end zone with 5 seconds left. So what does Washington's defense do? 5 seconds left, third down. They bring the house. They almost sack Quinn Ewers. He throws it out of bounds. 1 second left, fourth down. They get a playoff. He chucks it into the end zone. No bueno. So Washington wins in a huge game. I kept hearing, and we talked about it, Texas's defense is underrated, fourth-ranked rushing defense in the country. Didn't matter. Washington, huge winner. And I think Kalen DeBoer is a great coach.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been so impressed with Washington, man. I'm loving the way they play. They're playing with a lot of swagger right now. And it just doesn't matter who you throw in front of them as an opponent. They don't care because we're going to go out, we're going to ball, and we're going to do us. So I'm really looking forward to this game because I think they can throw it around the house, just throw it around the park on Michigan and complete balls. And before you know it, man, they've taken 3 different shots and now it's 21-3. So to me, with the lack of this may sound a tad bit harsh, but for the lack of quarterback play we got in the first game, they definitely made up for it in the second game. 100%. With Quinn Ewers and Michael Penix Jr. Like, hey, man, we got to watch some good quarterbacks go at it, throw it in the yard, and make some crazy plays. So that was fun to watch. And both of these games were really good games. Like, you can't – I'm torn between, you know, the community get it wrong. I definitely believe Georgia should be in there. But it's a harder argument now because of the good games that we got.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I totally agree.
They both came down to the wire. Basically, whoever had the ball in their hands last, and both times the defenses stepped up and made a play. So just some good things from these games. Fun to watch. Definitely had us on our toes for sure.
No question about it. Wrap it up. I got a couple of good stats for you. And Chris Marler, our buddy at Vern Funquist on Twitter, Saturday Down South, tweeted these out. In the first 8 years of the college football playoff era, the average margin of victory in the semifinal games was 21 points per game. Yep. In the last 2 years, it's 5 points per game, with all 4 games being decided by 7 points or less, and 3 of the 4 coming down to the final play of the game. So just as it's starting to work out, we're expanding to 12 teams. The other stat: the SEC finished this season with 4 teams having 11-plus wins. That's only happened 5 times in the history of college football. Oh, yeah, and all 5 times were by the SEC, including 2012 when they finished with 5 teams with 11-plus wins. So, pretty fascinating. pretty fascinating. Cool. I think we're set up with a great national championship game. Again, that's Monday night, so we'll preview that later on this week. It was fun, man. And now, you know, people are back to work. The emails are popping off this morning. Jake, you guys got one more game, week 18 coming up, hosting the Dallas Cowboys as a 4:25 p.m. kick. Jake will be suited up on the sideline in those skinny ones for the Washington Commanders. So back to reality for Mr. and Mrs. Fromm, right?
Man, we're back at it, back on the grind. Can see, you know, past this weekend and on to the off season. So we're looking forward to the baby on the way and ready for another off season, but gotta lock in and enjoy this last week. So we're excited.
Absolutely. Lock in. And you, the listener, should lock in as well. Go visit the Solomon Brothers. Yeah, I know. You probably got some gifts for Christmas or the holidays. Maybe you got some money. Money is always the best gift. If you have that money burning a hole in your pocket and you'd like to treat yourself to something nice or somebody who you care deeply about to something nice, go to Solomon Brothers Jewelers. Three awesome locations. One's in Alpharetta, just past the Avalon. The other is in Buckhead, 17th floor Tower Place, in a brand new location in Peachtree City. Family owned and operated since 1982. I'm telling you right now, they have the biggest selection, the best quality, the lowest prices, and the in-store experience is what sends it all way over the top. They have custom jewelry designs, lifetime diamond upgrades, and they offer interest-free financing options. The store is for anyone with any budget. Mention Punt and Pass or myself and Jake. You can get 10% off your jewelry purchase. Check them out on social media at Solomon Brothers, SolomonBrothers.com. Check us out on social media at Punt and Pass on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Drew Butler. He's at From Jake, PuntandPass.com. Jake, anything on the way out, my man?
Oh, man. One more college football game.
I know.
God left me. This year, man. Where does the time go? But looking forward to it. Going to be a great matchup. Look forward to seeing you guys on Thursday.
Yes, sir. Everybody have a great week. Happy New Year. Happy 2024. And we will talk to you on Thursday. See you.
Yep.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves. And people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required. And they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Camp Margaritaville RV Resort, where you can just breathe in and breathe out. Or move. There's biking, boating, arcade games, hiking, nearby golfing. Or fly through the new Fins Up Water Park. Thrills, chills, twists, and turns. This could be you. Camp Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, an easy one-hour drive from Atlanta. Book your stay today at CampMargaritavilleLanierIslands.com.